Hello and welcome to today's reading of selections from the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, January 13, 2026, read by Janelle Eckerman. And as always, I'll begin with the front page, and the main article is Keep the Help Flowing. GMOC Breadbasket Ministry, ready to feed those in need, and the article was written by Danette Beckett. Decatur. Decatur resident LaShanda Jarrett greets people visiting the Greater Mount Olive Church Breadbasket Ministry Food Distribution Day with a smile. "I like giving back to the community," she said. "I like helping." Along with assisting the community while they shop for the free food, Jarrett's responsibilities for the local food distribution centre include setting up and stocking shelves. "We unload the trucks and put everything in their proper spots," she said. "Once the doors open, I just help keep the flow going." Twice a month, the GMOC Breadbasket Ministry provides food for those in need. The community can visit the food distribution building from 3 to 5pm on the first and second Tuesdays of the month at 1735 West Hunt Street, Decatur. Jarrett said she has witnessed the appreciation from those in need. "You never know what somebody's going through," she said. "Every little bit helps, and Miss Mary will take all the help she can get." According to organiser Mary Dawson, the GMOC Breadbasket Ministry began helping the Decatur community by offering the free food approximately 4 years ago. "But we were members of Loving Missionary Baptist Church in Bloomington," she said. "We used to help them out a lot." The organisers would bring their leftover items to a Decatur garage for those who needed food. "Some of the members and some of my friends began to help out there," Dawson said. The Mount Olive minister at the time recognised the ministry and suggested using a nearby building for food distribution. "That area was used for church picnics and stuff like that," Dawson said. And this article is then continued onto page A2. Although the food distribution centre is located across the street from the Mount Olive Church, the items are meant to help the community, Dawson said. "Even though we have the name GMOC, it's for the community," she said. "It's for anybody and everybody." Organisers receive a wide variety of food items through various opportunities. Midwest Food Bank of Illinois in Bloomington is the primary source. "Our church van is always packed to the max," Dawson said. Several volunteers and church members have purchased food items, taking advantage of grocery deals. "We watch the ads," Dawson said. The GMOC Breadbasket Ministry has three freezers available for storage, but we could use more, Dawson said about the appliance. "There's sometimes that we just can't take any more frozen items. Bins and totes are filled with individual items, such as bags of beans, onions, or rice, allowing the visitors the opportunity to take as much as they need. To encourage fresh fruits and vegetables collection, volunteers may bring a meal for a taste test or an example. However, food isn't the only need among the community. Donations of clean coats and clothing fill racks in another adjacent building. Volunteers also make an effort to provide positive interactions with the people visiting the centre. Usually I will ask, "Is this your first time?" Dawson said about an ice-breaking question. Then I'll ask, "How did you find out about us?" First-timers will receive a nylon bag to fill with needed food. For future visits, they will need to reuse the bag or bring their own. The volunteer-run organisation uses the financial donations to purchase supplies as well as non-perishable food items. Volunteers not only help with food distribution, they set up the organised shelves before the visitors arrive. "We still have food coming in," Dawson said about the volunteers' routines. "Safety is our concern. Approximately 8 visitors are allowed in the building at a time. Volunteers wear masks. They also offer masks to the visitors who arrive without the protective apparel. The GMOC Breadbasket Ministry hasn't taken advantage of the local community food drives. The food distribution event has been slowly growing, a characteristic Dawson said is beneficial for the volunteers and others in the community. We felt we were comfortable with what we had, she said. We're gradually just moving into the right direction. And with this article, there are two photos, and the main photo is from the front page, and the caption is, Mary Dawson, organiser of the Greater Mount Olive Church Breadbasket Ministry, searches for an item in a freezer. She said the group could use more of the appliances as they try to provide a variety of food items to those in need. And the second photo is captioned, Shelves are stocked with a variety of items at the GMOC Breadbasket Food Distribution Event. The photos are courtesy of Danette Beckett from the Herald and Review. And moving along from the front page, the next article is Illinois Politics, Anti-Mary Miller Billboards Shown Across District. Mattoon, a billboard proclaiming Mary Miller has failed Illinois has been placed at Decatur and at a high traffic intersection in the Republican Congresswoman's home county by the Illinois Democratic County Chairs Association. The billboard was set up Friday morning in Coles County along the north side of the Charleston Avenue, Illinois 16 Railroad Bridge at the intersection with Lakeland Boulevard, US 45 in Mattoon. A matching billboard in Decatur is at the intersection of Garfield Avenue and 2nd Street. A representative for the Illinois Democratic County Chairs Association reported the billboards also have been erected in Jacksonville and Quincy, with four more planned in Miller's 15th congressional district. The 15th is a sprawling district that covers most of the rural areas and small towns of central Illinois, stretching from the Missouri and Iowa borders all the way to the Indiana state line. And this article is then continued onto page A6. Mary Miller is running for re-election, so we thought we'd help advertise what exactly she has accomplished for her district, which is a whole hell of a lot of nothing, said Association President Mark Guthel in a news release. Guthel added he feels that Miller, a Hinsborough resident, has prioritised far-right symbolic bills over actions that would help those facing rising healthcare costs, distributions to soybean markets, and other issues in her district. Coles County Democrats Chairman Mac White said he feels that Miller has deliberately avoided seeking grant funding for social services, public works projects, and other needs for her district due to her political beliefs, which has hurt the residents here. There are a lot of people in this district that need help, White said of this. In addition, White said Miller was among the Republicans who supported eliminating PBS funding nationally. White said this threatens the future of Eastern Illinois University's WEIU and its community service programming. White, who works for WEIU, said it also has led to layoffs there, with his set for mid-May. Efforts by the JGTC to reach Miller or her representatives for comment were unsuccessful. Miller, who is one of Trump's most ardent and, at times, controversial backers, is seeking her fourth term. She is being challenged in the March 17 primary by Republicans Judy Bowlby and Ryan Tiebruger. There are four Democrat candidates, Jennifer Todd, Randy Rowley, Paul Davis, and Kai Newdo. Illinois deserves better than Mary Miller, Guthel said. The IDCCA will be fully behind whoever earns the Democratic nomination in Illinois' 15th congressional district, doing everything in our power to help them win. Coles County Republicans Chair Mark Essery said the billboards are clearly a politically motivated attack message. Essery said the vast majority of voters and citizens that comprise Congresswoman Miller's Republican-leaning district feel she has provided and continues to provide excellent representation mirroring their own values and priorities. Further, the belief of most of the voters and citizens in her district feel that the real and catastrophic failure in representation and blame for horrible public policy lies with Governor Pritzker, SRE said, and my apologies for any mispronunciations. I'll now include some local and state articles, and the first is from page A3 and written by Meredith Howard, and the title is Where Are People Going? Professional Movers List Chicago Among Highest Number of Move-Outs. Belleville. Chicago has one of the greatest number of move-outs among U.S. regions, according to a report from moving company PODS. The PODS analysis, published in May 2025, found Chicago has the seventh greatest number of move-outs, with more reported than in Santa Barbara, Boston, or Seattle. The report was based on PODS net long-distance moving numbers from January 2024 to March 2025. Los Angeles landed in the number one spot for move-outs, with Northern California, South Florida, Long Island, New York, San Diego, and Central Jersey rounding out the top six areas. High costs of living have contributed to people moving from expensive metropolitan areas. In Chicago, median home sale prices have increased by 8.6% in the last year, according to real estate company Redfin. The cost of rent is unaffordable for many Chicago area residents as well. The National Low Income Housing Coalition reports Chicagoland's Kendall County and the Chicago Joliet Naperville area are the two most expensive metros in the state, with housing wages of $36.27 and $33.87, respectively. A housing wage refers to the minimum wage a person working full-time would need to earn to be able to afford a two-bedroom rental home. Illinois' statewide housing wage is $29.81, more affordable than Chicagoland's, but still far exceeding the state's minimum wage of $15. Stalwart patterns continue to show an exodus from once popular hive-like megacities, where skyrocketing costs of living and population densities are the norm, in favour of smaller, more breathable cities and towns, with lower costs of living, easier access to the outdoors, and vibrant, self-contained cultural scenes, PODS analysis read. While Chicago ranked high in PODS report on move-outs, the city only lost 1% of its net population from 2020 to 2024, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. Some nearby suburbs gain population, with Naperville up 2.4% and Aurora gaining a slight 0.1%. Where are residents moving to? Metro areas in North Carolina, Florida, South Carolina, and Texas performed well in PODS report for the cities with the greatest number of move-ins. The list reflects move-ins from anywhere, not just those leaving Chicago. Here's how the top 10 metro areas for move-ins stacked up, according to PODS. The first is Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, Wilmington, North Carolina, Ocala, Florida, Raleigh, North Carolina, Greenville, Spartanburg, South Carolina, Dallas, Fort Worth, Charlotte, North Carolina, Boise, Idaho, Knoxville, Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee, and Jacksonville, Florida. Although no Illinois cities made the top 10 list, four cities with the greatest number of move-ins, 15 Illinois counties gained residents from 2020 to 2024, according to Census Bureau data. Counties to gain the greatest percentage of population over the four-year period included Kendall County, despite its relatively high cost of living, Champaign County, Grundy County, McHenry County, and Will County. And the next article from the same page is about immigration enforcement, Decatur, and the title is Killed in Cold Blood. Protesters take firm stand on ICE, back Renee Nicole Good, and the article's written by Tony Reid. Decatur. Alarmed by recent fatalities in public confrontations, with the dramatically stepped-up efforts to hunt down undocumented immigrants by Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents, protesters braved a 19-degree wind chill in Decatur Sunday afternoon to say they've had enough of the bloodshed. Tim O'Connor was one of a handful of six protesters to begin with, but whose numbers swelled as the afternoon wore on, who gathered at the intersection of El Dorado and North Franklin streets to make their feelings known. O'Connor said that ICE, under the leadership of US Secretary of Homeland Security Kristi Noem, has caused the deaths of more than 30 people in custody and direct violence amid a frenzy of deportations to fulfill the policy aims of President Donald Trump. And they have renditioned people to countries in which they have never been, exposing those people to human rights abuses in those countries' prisons, said O'Connor, 55, who lives in Decatur. We stand fully opposed to spending our tax money for the terror, torture and human rights abuses committed by this regime under the excuse of national security. Sunday's Decatur protest was organised by a group called Soy City Indivisible and was part of a nationwide series of events aimed at showing the federal government that it faces a growing wave of opposition. Several protesters carried signs honouring US citizen Renee Nicole Good, shot dead in Minneapolis in a confrontation with ICE agents. The government says Good died because she was using her vehicle as a weapon and trying to kill the ICE agent who shot her. Secretary Noem described Good's actions as amounting to domestic terrorism. O'Connor and his fellow protesters said that characterization of the dead woman was ridiculous. We reject the lie that Renee Good was a terrorist, but instead was a mother, a writer, a motorist, and a citizen who was murdered in cold blood by the incompetent at best and malevolent at worst, law enforcement of ICE, O'Connor added. We demand the agency be stopped, defunded, and held accountable for the crimes that it has committed against humanity and against the citizens. Citizenry it is charged with protecting. Preaching this message to a passing audience of traffic in an area known to hold many Trump voters might seem at first glance to be a thankless task, but O'Connor hopes that being confronted by him and his colleagues will help give others the courage to take a stand themselves for what they believe is right. And this area might not be as Trumpy as you think, he said. That's a view shared by fellow protester Stephanie Brown, 62, from Mount Zion. I will say when we stand on this corner that for every one car that yells obscenities, 15 to 20 are giving us positive honks, said Brown. So while you may say this is a Trumpy area, I do think we have a lot of support for today. Michael Feltz, standing close by Brown, said people should be concerned that ICE's paramilitary aggression was undermining a fundamental hallmark of civilization, governing and policing with the consent of those governed and policed. So to me, it insults our local and state law enforcement officials to group ICE with them, he said. ICE is not acting with the kind of responsibility that is necessary in a democracy for people exercising legitimate authority. And now some lovely news from page A5. First baby of 2026 born at Sarah Bush Lincoln. Mattoon. Crosby Joseph Graven of Sullivan became the first baby of the new year at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Centre after he arrived about a month earlier than expected. Crosby, the son of Megan and Tyler Graven, was born at 4:17 a.m. on January 1, weighing 6 pounds 8 ounces and measuring 19.5 inches long at this Mattoon hospital. We definitely were not planning on delivery for New Year's. He showed up 4 weeks early. My due date was January 30, 2026, so we were in a little bit of shock when my water broke, Megan Graven said. Having Crosby become the first baby of 2026 was a nice little surprise after the shock of going into labour early and ending up having an emergency C-section, Graven said. She added that they had wonderful care in the obstetrics department, specifically from staff members Ivy, Shanti and Paige. Crosby is now at home in Sullivan with his parents and with his two siblings, Gibson 6 and Macklin 2. He has been perfect. He is pretty calm and really only cries when he has to get his diaper changed, Graven said. His big brothers are obsessed with his every move, and we are so grateful to have added another baby boy to our family. Regarding the name Crosby, Graven said she had been considering it as an option for some time. Graven said she and her family are also big Las Vegas Raiders fans, and their best player is Max Crosby, so that helped them seal the deal for their new baby's first name. His middle name is Joseph after my husband Tyler's grandfather. All three of our sons' middle names now represent mine and my husband's three grandpas, who were very special to us, Graven said. And with this article is the most beautiful photo, and it's captioned, Crosby Joseph Graven of Sullivan, born at 4:17 a.m. January 1, was the first baby of 2026 at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center. And that photo was provided by his mum, Megan Graven. And also from the same page, the next article is Trees on the Tees Winners Announced, and it's written by Jeanette Beckett. Decatur. The Decatur Park District has announced the winners of the 2025 Trees on the Tees People's Choice Awards. Best One Tires was honoured as the Best Course Tree. Friends of the Decatur Public Library received the Best Pavilion Tree Award. The annual Trees on the Tees is held during the first 2 weeks in December at Hickory Point Golf Course. Nearly 50 business, agencies and individuals decorated the evergreens lining the course for this year's event. 20 non-profit organisations decorated the trees in the pavilion, along with other activities including hot chocolate and s'mores by the fire pit and entertainment by the Decatur Park District dancers. Guests were allowed to vote on their favourite trees, and the two photos with this article are very colourful, and the first one is captioned, Trees on the Tees, People's Choice Course Tree, Best One Tires. And the second photo is captioned, Trees on the Tees, People's Choice Pavilion Tree, Friends of the Decatur Public Library. And those photos were provided. And moving along in today's reading of the Decatur Herald and Review, for Tuesday, January 13, 2026, the next two articles come from page A6 in local news. And the first one is Man Charged with Punching Woman in Face, and it's written by Tony Reid. Decatur. An argument over a bathroom resulted in a man threatening to stab a woman in the eye with a pen before punching her in the head, police report. Sergeant Justin Clausen with the Decatur Police Department said trouble flared around 9:30 a.m. Friday at the offices of the Empowerment Opportunity Centre in the 300 block of East Marietta Street. Clausen said the 61-year-old suspect became enraged over claims he had been attacked by another man in a dispute about an unlocked bathroom door and confronted the victim, 54, in her office. An argument ensued, at which time the suspect picked up an uncapped ink pen and threatened to stab the female in the eye, Clausen said. She then began to exit her office to go and tell the other employees that this situation had escalated, at which time the suspect confronted her again and punched her in the face. Clausen said patrol officers located the man a short distance from the building and arrested him on a preliminary charge of aggravated battery. He was given a notice ordering him to appear in court. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the Office of the State's Attorney. The Empowerment Opportunity Centre describes itself as an organisation dedicated to improving the quality of life and empowering people facing financial instability. And the second article, also written by Tony Reid, is Gunman Sought After Argument, Police Say. Decatur. Police report that an argument fueled by heavy drinking led to a Decatur woman fleeing to the home of a stranger and pleading for help after a male suspect pulled a gun. Sergeant Justin Clausen with the Decatur Police Department said patrol officers were alerted to the situation around 12:38 a.m. Saturday. The female, aged 25, had fled to a house in the 1800 block of North 27th Street, beaten on the door and convinced a gentleman there to call 911, which he did on her behalf, Clausen said. It looks like several people had been at a house in the 1900 block of North 27th with possibly a large consumption of alcohol among those present, and a man present there had become angry. This man had pulled a silver handgun from the pocket of his hooded jacket. The weapon was not presented at anyone. It just sounds like it was used as an intimidation factor here, and that is when the woman fled. The suspect was gone when police arrived, and he is being sought on weapons charges. And the last article is Starved Rock Ledge Event to Eye Bald Eagles, and it's from page A5, and written by D. Jack Elkire. Oglesby. Starved Rock Lodge and Conference Centre invites families and nature enthusiasts to a two-day eagle-watching weekend in late January to view and learn about the American bald eagle. Programs are free to all and begin at 9 a.m. running through 4 p.m. on January 24 and 25 at four locations around the state park. Starved Rock Lodge, Illinois Waterway Visitors Centre, Utica Village Hall and the Starved Rock State Park Visitors Centre. Alongside the free 45-minute presentations throughout the weekend, members of the Starved Rock Audubon Society, an independent organisation focused on conservation of native animals, will have viewing scopes at the Illinois Waterway Visitors Centre and be available to answer questions about bald eagles. In addition, there will be ticketed guided hikes departing at 10 a.m. from the Starved Rock Lodge lobby. Tickets are $20 and participants will receive snacks and a souvenir drawstring backpack. Trolley rides from the lodge will take viewers to all four event sites from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. each day. Wristbands offer unlimited rides for each day per person and can be purchased for $5 online or with cash on the trolley. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/EagleWatch2026 or call the Activities Department at Starved Rock Lodge at 815-220-7386. I'll now take a short break and return with part two of today's reading of selections from the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, January 13, 2026, read by Janelle Eckerman. Please stay tuned.